Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. This week on Franchise Today, the Franchise Finance 2010 series continues with guest Daryl Johnson, President and CEO at Frandata. Daryl and I will continue the discussion on franchise finance in today's segment, The New Normal and How Lenders Really Think About Financing Franchises. Last week, Ron Feldman, CEO at Siegel Capital, was my guest, and we started the franchise finance series. In that segment, aptly titled, Who Moved the Money and Where Can I Find It?, Ron and I discussed the current state of SBA financing, including a look at SBA 504 and 7A programs. In addition, Ron provided insight into what Siegel Capital does for franchisees and franchisors alike. Thanks, Ron, for sharing your thoughts and experience, and we appreciate you being a guest on Franchise Today. I'd also like to take this opportunity to thank my co-producer, Joe Caruso, for putting together another great informative series that is certainly a hot topic and on everyone's mind within franchising. Great job, Joe. Yesterday on Franchise News Radio, I spent a good portion of the show discussing news and information from the IFA. I'd like to share some of that right here today. As we reported last week, the IFA has announced the appointment of Steve Caldera to the position of President and CEO at the IFA. It's our understanding Steve's first day on the job was the other day, June 15th. Again, welcome aboard, Steve. We look forward to meeting you, and hopefully we can arrange some time for you to visit with us on a future segment of Franchise Today. In the IFA publication, Franchising World, the June issue presents articles to attract women, minority, and military veteran franchisees and to boost franchise brands. Articles will include incentive companies are offering to attract franchisees, outreach seminars that forge relationships with officials, the role of chief diversity officers, financing, and examples of the new minority majority. Plus, this issue includes business building strategies from CEOs, email marketing tips, and steps to manage a crisis. Look for the digital version of the magazine available soon on IFA's website at www.franchise.org. Now let's take a look at some of IFA's upcoming events. September 13th and 14th is IFA Public Affairs Conference. Now this event, formerly Franchise Appreciation Day, will be held at the JW Marriott in Washington, D.C. Now I urge you and your franchise colleagues to go to Washington and serve as an ambassador for franchising. Make your voice heard on the issues affecting your business. This conference is the franchise industry's most important advocacy event. And this year's a critical time for lawmakers to know the contribution franchising makes to the nation's economy, particularly in this time of economic crisis. Now, members of Congress need to know how franchising is being impacted by their decisions during meetings on Capitol Hill, and your voices will be heard. Over 500 franchisors, franchisees, and suppliers participated last year to tell franchising's story. Join the IFA again this year to lobby Congress on the issues that matter most in protecting the business climate for franchising. You know, while we're at it, talking about the IFA efforts on Capitol Hill, I feel compelled to mention a very important program, FranPAC. One way the IFA can be an effective public policy advocate for franchising is through a strong and vibrant political action committee, otherwise known as a PAC. FranPAC creates an opportunity for IFA members to provide financial support to candidates for federal office, and a robust PAC means more contributions to candidates who understand franchising and who will promote a legislative and regulatory climate favorable to franchising. Thanks to the generosity and participation of IFA members in the 2005-2006 federal election cycle, FranPAC was able to invest approximately $360,000 in support of over 125 selected franchise-friendly federal candidates. Now, successful pro-franchising political advocacy efforts include not only a healthy FranPAC, but a powerful grassroots network. The two go hand in hand. Since the launch of a political education website for its members in the fall of 2002, IFA has made great strides in increasing voter awareness and turning out the vote. FranchisingVotes.com provides voter info, candidate profiles, and election results, and provides IFA members the opportunity to write their members of Congress, senators, and state legislators about issues that are important to the franchising community. In addition, you can register to vote, gather information about state and federal candidates, and even find your polling places. And as a benefit to IFA members, IFA member companies can set up pages like the franchisingvotes.com page for their own companies for free. For more information, please contact Victoria Adams, Director of Political Affairs, at 202-662-0781 or send her an email to vadams@franchise.org. Actually, ask her about the very affordable dollar-a-day program to help support FranPAC efforts. Okay, here's what I did yesterday on the air. I wrote out a check in the amount of $365 for FranPAC. A personal check, I might add, as individuals may contribute, not companies. I mailed it and now encourage you to join me by doing the same. Well, let me take that back. I challenge you to do the same. That's right. Take out your checkbooks and do the same right now. Believe me when I tell you the efforts of FranPAC will be evident for years to come. So certainly do your part today. Now, on Monday, we received a news release from the IFA relating to franchise finance. So I guess our franchise finance series was timed perfectly. Anyway, this release announced IFA to develop tools and best practices to help industry access credit. The release stated, International Franchise Association Chairman Ken Walker announced the formation of a board-level credit access working group to develop tools and best practices to support the efforts of IFA members and prospective franchisees to access capital. IFA has been very active in Washington, D.C. on legislative and regulatory changes to increase the access to credit. Walker said to complement those efforts, the working group will develop a plan of action to create educational sessions and information to help make the case to lenders and others at the grassroots level about the ability of franchise businesses to contribute significantly to local economies. An IFA study conducted by FranData, and we have Daryl Johnson here on the line waiting for me, estimates that banks are expected to lend $6.7 billion to franchises in 2010 versus the $10.1 billion that would meet 100% of demand. The shortfall can be attributed to banks' conservative approach to a weak economic outlook and uncertainty in the commercial real estate market. At 100% lending, franchise businesses could create or maintain 305,000 jobs and $32 billion of annual economic output in 2010. The $3.4 billion shortfall in lending would result in 134,000 total jobs not created or maintained, and $13.9 billion of annual economic output. The new working group will be co-chaired by IFA board members Bill Hall, CFA CEO of William G. Hall & Company, and Scott Presley, CFE and managing partner of Van Ness Capital Advisors. Other members include IFA board members Harold Loyal, chairman of Comfort Care Senior Services, our guest today, Daryl Johnson, CFE President and CEO of FranData Corporation, Shelley Sun, CFE CEO and co-founder of Brightstar Franchising, and previous Franchise Today guest Lane Fisher, CFE and partner at Fisher Zucker. The working group will begin immediately to develop templates and guidance on what information lenders are now requesting as they consider loan applications. Now, today's guest, Daryl Johnson, is president and CEO of FranData Corp., an independent research company supplying information analysis for the franchise sector since 1989. His career spans information services, commercial banking, investment banking, and federal finance regulation. Before acquiring Frandatter in 2001, he was a commercial banking executive where he started an SBA lending unit, developed small business lending teams for cooperative and franchise borrowers, established an equity investment program for cooperative businesses, built a leasing program, and managed a healthcare lending team. Daryl, welcome to Franchise Today.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be a part of this.
Well, happy to have you here, and happy to see that you're on the group at the IFA that's leading our efforts on Capitol Hill with respect to financing. You know, but before we get into the subject of franchise finance, Daryl, let me ask you how you got involved with Frandatter.
Well, I'll be happy to address that. Before I do, let me just reiterate something that you spent a few minutes talking about, what the IFA is doing with regard to legislation on activities that affect franchising. And I'd like to put that in a slightly different perspective, but just to give you a sense of how important it is that your listeners and the franchise community in general support what the IFA is doing. So much of the focus of this economic recovery has been targeted to small business, and so much of the legislative action, well-intended but often misdirected, has been aimed at doing things that would, at least in some of the legislators' perceptions, improve conditions for small businesses. As we know, those things don't always happen the way they should, and well-intended or not, we get sometimes adverse outcomes. So there's a lot of competing and changing views as to what should be happening on Capitol Hill. The good news on all of this is that the IFA, over the last couple of years, has come to be one of the most respected voices of small business in Washington. That has given them a voice that not only represents franchising, but more importantly represents small business in general, and therefore Congress and the administration listen to what they are saying to a much greater degree than was even true just a few years ago. Having said that, it's very important at this stage to really get behind what the IFA is doing and support the activities, the PAC funds, the policy conference in September, all of the things you mentioned. That's why it's important. We are actually becoming very successful in articulating issues that affect franchising because what affects franchising affects small business, and that proxy for small business increasingly by Congress has been defined as what's going on in franchising. So the two are tied closely together, and I really encourage all your listeners to support that effort. Now,
the question was, how you basically got involved in Frandatter, because a lot of our listeners might not be aware of your involvement in Frandatter and how you got involved in it, you know, before purchasing it.
As you described my biography, my history back in the 1990s, where I was both an investment banker and a commercial banker, and I had been doing a lot of work in the franchise space with franchise lending. And in the late 1990s, I had started an SBA lending unit for a bank that I was working with that was focused predominantly on franchise lending. And had a conventional lending, small business lending group that was also focused on franchising. And I had a third group that was focused on marketing to small businesses and developing specialty programs for small businesses. At that time, Frandatter, which had been in existence for 11 years at that point, had gone through the dot-com investor era and had some problems. We had used Frandatter extensively for some of the programs that we were putting together, and as a result of that, had the opportunity to acquire Frandatter, which I did on behalf of the bank initially, and then several years later, I did a management buyout, and since late 2003, early 2004, have been operating Frandatter separate from any other organization.
Right. Yeah, very interesting. While it's fairly obvious, the name Frandatter, that your company has something to do with franchising and data, why don't you tell us what Frandatter's areas of specialization are?
Well, first and foremost, we are a research and information company. Our primary focus is being able to understand and evaluate what is going on at all levels of franchising and translate that into information and reports and analysis that can lead to better decisions by our clients. Our clients tend to fall into two categories, either companies that are franchising or considering franchising, so the franchisor side of things, or the suppliers, the companies, the businesses that are serving the franchise community in some level, whether it be banks, which is primarily the topic today, or whether it's service providers, whether it's equipment providers, the whole cadre of businesses that are looking at the franchise space as an opportunity for them to expand their business. So about half of what we do serves on the supplier side, and about half of what we do focuses on the franchisor side. And in both cases, what we are being asked to assess is what franchise systems are doing, where they're doing it, how they're doing it, how well they're doing it, how their performance is, a lot of benchmarking, a lot of specialty questions that we address along the way. And in the process of doing that, we often uncover needs such as what we have done on the finance side, where we have several types of services that we provide to the franchise community that are specifically related to finance. And those primarily are, we have been for many years managing the SBA's franchise registry, which is a process that franchisors go through to get qualified under SBA standards. And we have more recently developed a product around helping franchisors assist their franchisees in accessing the capital markets because of all of the disruption that goes on there. And we have a lot of bank credit reports and a lot of analysis that we do that provides lenders with a better perspective and understanding of how a particular franchise system performs.
Wow, it seems like quite a bit of work and very complicated at times.
Well, it's both of those things, but fundamentally, lending is a fairly basic business. A bank makes a loan with a reasonable expectation of getting their money back, and while the assessment of that risk is something that has changed over time, the basic approach is, if they're going to put money out the door in the hands of small businesses, they want to have some degree of confidence that that small business can support that financing request and will perform at a level that will allow those banks to get their money back. And what's happened over the last couple of years is that perception in the banking community has changed dramatically, along with several other things that have had a substantial impact on this flow of capital. As you noted earlier, study that Fran Data did for the IFA, there is an imbalance between the supply and demand of capital for franchise small businesses today. And 3 years ago, nobody was talking about this because it was the other way around. There was more supply of capital than there was demand for capital. And while the demand was fairly high, there was more than enough willingness on the part of the lending community to provide capital to franchising. That has changed. And it has changed not because of any adverse impact that lenders have had in the franchise space. In fact, the franchise portfolios, by and large, have performed quite well for most lenders. What's changed is all of the economic factors that are outside or exogenous to what's happened in the franchise space. And those things have had a substantial impact on the capital flows going to franchising. As a result, today we're in this imbalance where the demand for franchise capital is substantially greater than the willingness and, in some cases, the ability of the lending community to provide that capital.
I see. Now, I know, and everybody within franchising, at least that's awake, knows you're a frequent and sought-after speaker on franchise finance and SBA lending, and you know, our primary audience are franchise professionals faced with an unprecedented franchise financing environment, and they basically want to understand what the heck happened and when they can expect things to get back to normal, if there is such a word.
let me address that a couple different ways, Paul, because that's fundamentally, it's not sort of what happened, but what's going to happen that everyone wants to know. And I think that's a very reasonable question. And I think with some degree of confidence, we can explain what is likely to happen over the next year or two in the area of capital access for franchise systems. To start with, the reason that I talk a lot about that and the reason that FranData has been involved in this to the degree that we have is there's a strong belief on FranData is the primary source of information on franchising, and we are rather unique in that sense. There's no other company in the franchise space that has the level of information and the ability to analyze and sort through that information that we do. As a result, we feel that we have a fiduciary responsibility to the industry to try and explain and convey certain macroeconomic forecasts for the benefit of everyone, because we sit in that nerve center of understanding so much of what's going on that we're happy to provide that type of information. So to specifically to your question of what's likely to be coming or when will we get back to normal, we've heard a lot of press coverage over the last year or two about the new normal. Well, in fact, the new normal is the old normal before the old normal changed. And that may sound confusing, but let me just take you back in time. In the 1980s and 1990s, we had capital constraints in accessing capital for small business. And that was largely solved by pricing, and it was solved by detailed underwriting that banks would do. Banks would provide required a lot of documentation. They wanted to see a performance history. They wanted to understand the borrower. We got into a period in this last decade of the 2000s when those things became more formulaic in the minds of lenders who thought, well, they can assess risk not by doing the traditional detailed underwriting, but by doing it through statistical measures and just qualifying certain things like credit scores and certain basic measures. And the reason they were doing this is because banks were not experiencing much in the way of losses in their small business lending, to franchising at least. And so the development side of the bank said, well, if we don't have losses and this works, let's keep doing it. We obviously know what we're doing. Well, what happened is they didn't know what they were doing as well as they thought, and the statistical approach to underwriting did not prove out to be successful or as successful as many banks had thought. And that was in small business in general, not just with regard to franchising. And so what happened is, as part of the economic downturn, which had its own psychological impact on the willingness of banks to provide money to anybody, there was the upsetting concern within the banking community that the underwriting standards and the approach that they were using weren't working. And so now they had to figure out what would work. Well, as common sense would suggest, they went too conservative the other way, because until they sort of found their legs in that middle path, they were going to really pull back. And that's the environment we're in today, where the underwriting standards are very restrictive. On the conventional lending side, that is to say the non-SBA lending side, there's very little business going on right now. Banks, by and large, are not making conventional loans to small business, including to small business, franchise small businesses. That's put a lot more emphasis on the SBA side of things, which is why we have seen the large expansion of SBA lending over the last year. And that was helped, and Congress rightfully made some decisions about encouraging that, and it was largely supported and advocated by the IFA, that they increased to 90% their guarantees from 75%. They waive some borrower fees. They take some other steps that would encourage further SBA lending, because the conventional lending, which is lending that banks have 100% of the risk when they make that loan, was drying up. And so the environment we're in today is that we have a growing SBA lending side of the business. So the capital access at the SBA side is somewhat vibrant, certainly more active than it was just a couple of years ago. But we have no return to conventional lending, which is the real signal that banks have become comfortable with both what the economic forecast is likely to be and what they're willing and their capital base that allows them to say, we will take 100% of the risk of making this loan on conventional terms, and we're comfortable doing that. That has not yet returned to the market, and until that does, you won't have the imbalance between supply and demand corrected. And so the forecast aspect of this is, I don't see that coming back into balance for the next few years, not just in terms of how many months, but actually it's going to be a few years. And the reason I say that is multiple. First of all, a lot of the large banks that were involved in franchise lending
right.
either exited the market or are no longer around. In the case of Wachovia, was acquired by Wells Fargo. So you had a whole standalone bank consumed by another bank.
Mm-hmm.
Banco Popular yeah. was an active SBA lending organization in franchising, and they are out of the market. CIT was the largest SBA lender to franchising in the country for years. They almost went under and are still very, very slowly coming back into franchise lending. GE Capital, who is the largest conventional lender, has substantially cut back on the amount of lending activity that they're doing. And we can go on, but the point is the national players that were most active in franchise lending and the dominant source of capital in franchising have by and large exited the market, mostly for reasons other than related to their franchise experience. Some of them had way too many home mortgages that they were dealing with, and therefore their capital bases were eroded, and so they just don't have the money to lend. And others are trying to be very cautious in how they're inching back into the market in general, not just small business lending, but all across their entire portfolio. So to make up that shortfall, it's coming from regional and local banks, the smaller organizations that are less familiar with doing franchise lending, less experienced in understanding franchising, and therefore, by definition, slower in their willingness to get into it because they have to understand it before they're willing to make the loans. And so we have this imbalance that has to work its way out over the course of a few years, not in the course of a few months. We also have the challenge of what many banks are forecasting in the recovery and the turnaround that's going on. When a bank makes a franchise loan, they're putting a loan on the books for as 5, 10, maybe even more years. But the real risk and the greatest risk, certainly for a startup franchise, is in the first 2 to 3 years. And if we're still in a downturn when that's happening, you are not only having to deal with the risk of a startup, but you're dealing with the risk of a startup in a down economy, and the greatest risk being during that forecasted period for the next year to 2 years where the economy is not likely to turn around quickly. And so if you're a bank, what would you do? Well, either not lend or lend under much more stringent terms, take a lot longer to underwrite the loan and document it a lot better and go do a lot more due diligence, and those are the things that are happening. That's why I say I think we're looking at a few years of this imbalance to work its way out. That leads to, I think, where you wanted to go next, which is, so what's a franchise organization to do to solve this?
Right. But, do you think with this current view on things by the banking industry, do you think it's something that should have been done 10 years ago? Did they take their eye off the ball and maybe kind of go into cruise control or a cookie-cutter approach where they were relying more on the metrics and the credit scores as opposed to being more diligent in documentation and making sure that the small business owner could survive?
Well, Paul, it's very tempting to be like the forensic accountant and go in after the battle and bayonet the wounded. I do think it's easy to look in hindsight and say that those were mistakes. Now, I'm a farm boy. I grew up on a farm, and I was imbibed with a lot of common sense as sort of the main attribute that I have. And so I could look at what was being done 5 or 6 years ago in the rather frothy period of lending and say, you know, some of this just doesn't make a whole lot of sense, where because somebody's credit score happens to be above a certain level and they don't have any bankruptcies in the last 5 years and they're breathing, that they ought to get a loan and start a franchise. They don't have experience. They don't have, I mean, you can look at a lot of things and say, what's the likelihood that that's going to be successful? Well, I think a lot of that was happening, and in hindsight, we can look back and say that was really just getting carried away. Well, it was, but at the time, it's a little hard to see what's going on around you in the middle of something and say, yeah, this is crazy. You kind of get swept up in it a little bit. And it, at the time, from my perspective, when I was in on the banking side, and it really preceded this whole explosion statistically based lending of the mid-2000 period. But we had period cycles of this in the past. I was a financial regulator early in my career, and that's how I started my career. And you could see what was happening in banks when they were starting to get a little aggressive and liberal in their terms. And you could say, well, they can argue their way and justify it completely and say all of these things make sense. And at the time, you can say, yeah, I see what your arguments are, and I think they make sense. But in one way, but it would common sense suggest that that is likely to be successful long term? Banks make, when you're making a loan, you're making a bet for multiple years. You're not just doing something that says, well, if I get through 6 months, I should be okay with this. You're making a bet for 5 or 10 years. You're at most risk in franchise lending for if you're financing a new unit in that first 2 to 3 year period. Well, what made sense when you were in that frothy period, it certainly doesn't make sense in a down economy. So, I can criticize some of what was done, but we all, I think, at the time looked at it and said, maybe this is a little aggressive, but it's not too crazy.
Sure. And if one did turn them down, there was another one right there to pick it up. You know, I know you mentioned several of the national preferred SBA lenders of yesteryear, like CIT, GE Capital. You mentioned Banco Popular. Will we see a reemergence of these type of providers providing financing?
We will see an emergence of new lenders providing financing, and we're already seeing that. You had Ron Feldman on last week. I imagine, I didn't hear that program, but I imagine he talked about a program that he is working with Bancorp on to provide lending to certain types of franchise organizations. Well, you will see, you're beginning to see the seeds of the next phase of focus on franchise lending with organizations that may not have had much history with it but have the capacity to be fairly substantial players going forward. Those things will start evolving. The beauty of capitalism and capitalism in the United States is where there's opportunity, there's willingness, and it's just how fast that comes about and how smartly it comes about. And I think in capital flows, you will see this happen over the course of the next 3 or 4 years. It isn't going to happen quickly, but you will see some larger active players 3 or 4 years from now that on today's radar screen barely show up, if at all.
Now, that is interesting. You know, many professionals, franchise professionals, have heard about franchise loan securitization, but of course not everyone knows how it worked in providing liquidity to the market and what the state of securitization is or even what role it played. Can you kind of give us a little bit of your thoughts on that?
Securitization fundamentally is that an organization uses their capital to make a loan. Once
right.
that loan is made, they bundle it with other loans and sell it to a third party while they usually, but not always, maintain the servicing rights to it. So just as we did with home mortgages I'm sure you have a home mortgage, I have a home mortgage, I don't know who ultimately holds my mortgage. I just know who I closed that transaction with, because they put it with other
right.
loans and securitized it. Well, they did that with business loans, and they did it with commercial real estate, and there were a lot of securitization programs coming out of the late 90s and into the 2000 period where securitization of just about anything was starting to happen. We securitized credit card receivables. We securitized accounts receivable. We securitized just about everything that could be actuarially assessed and from a risk standpoint assessed. Now, some of them we weren't very good at, as the home mortgage collapse suggests, and that we encountered as a result of that. It just didn't work anywhere. It didn't perform under what the assumptions were that we thought it would. But fundamentally, that's what securitization is all about. In the late 90s and into about 2000, there was a fair amount of commercial real estate securitization that was going on in the franchise space, where the underlying real estate for and the building was being securitized, and it got very aggressive and it didn't work and it started to come apart. And so securitization in franchising started on the property side, went away in the early 2000 period and didn't come back. Now, where there a form of securitization has continued all the way through is SBA loans. You can take a small local bank that does an SBA loan for a $1 million SBA loan, and currently that's a 90% guarantee. Actually, that expired, but the assumption is that it's going to get extended. So let's say it's a 75% guarantee. So $750,000 of that are guaranteed by the U.S. government. That guarantee, there's a secondary market for that guarantee. So that bank that used $1 million of their own capital for that loan can take $750,000 of that and sell it into the secondary market and get their $750,000 back to re-lend or use it for other purposes. That's what securitization is, and it still exists for the SBA side. In fact, while it had some problems a couple of years ago when we had the big downdraft with the mortgage meltdown, it's pretty vibrant right now, and it's back and pretty healthy. So that's the only side of securitization that really is very realistic right now. There's so much going on in the commercial real estate side that is choppy and uncertain right now that it's unlikely to be any substantial activity on securitization on that side. For instance, commercial real estate across the U.S. hit its peak in 2007, about mid-year. Since then, it's off almost 40%. So the average valuation for commercial real estate is off almost 40%. That's another reason that banks, and particularly regional banks in this case, that provided a lot of the commercial real estate lending, are going to be slow to come back into the lending market because they're still trying to digest a lot of real estate loans that are underwater. A lot of those loans were done on relatively short-term loan. They were 3-year, 5-year. Bullets, and those are starting to roll in and come due in the end of 2010 and a lot in 2011. How they get financed or refinanced is an open question because a lot of those commercial real estate loans are underwater. So that's another reason why it's going to take a few years of this to kind of work its way through and get back to a flow of capital that's willing to come into small business in an aggressive way. Having said that, the main question that remains to be addressed is, so what's a franchise organization, a franchisee, a franchisor, what are they to do between now and 3 years from now when we may have things settle out and become more balanced? And the answer to that lies in information. And I say that not because we're an information company, but I say that as a former banker that says information reduces risk. The more you know, the better you know it, the more likely and more willing you are to make a loan that will be successful. And so if we are in an era now for the next few years where information reduces risk, the question then is, so what is a franchisor able to do to help facilitate that imbalance where there's far more borrowers seeking to borrow small business loans than there are lenders willing to make those small business loans? And that comes to better information with a better balance of performance will make the difference between getting access to capital. Because it isn't that banks are shut off. They aren't shut down. They're just more restrictive. And right. So if you're dealing with a more competitive environment where access is more restrictive and you're trying to appeal to that more restrictive market, your performance has to be better. I have said on many speeches over the last 2 years, we are in a period of time in franchising where performance matters. And if you remember nothing else from this conversation today, performance matters. And that means that when I'm a lender and you walk in and say you're a small businessman and you want a loan and it's a franchise, my first question isn't going to be, are you a qualified applicant? My first question is going to be, tell me about this franchise system. How well has it performed? What are the unit economics?
Right.
How
right.
Do the unit economics support this kind of activity? How do they compare to other brands? Are you above average? Is this system a better performer or a weaker performer? Because history is a great indicator of the future. And if I'm a lender, I always am looking at history. When you're a borrower, what is the first thing I ask you for? Show me your last
credit history.
Yeah, show me your credit history. Show me your financials for the last 12 months. Show me your tax returns for the last 12 or 24 or 36 months. I want to look at everything that you have done to give me an indication of what I should expect in the way of what you will do. And now the dynamic has changed fundamentally in how banks are approaching franchise lending, because now the question is, I know as a lender that some franchise systems perform better than others, that some franchise systems have better unit economics than others. But I'm a lender. I don't know which ones are better or which ones aren't. And so if you can't show me which ones are, or that your brand is better, then my answer is simple. I'm going to pass on this loan and find a brand that can walk in the door and say, here's our unit economics, and we're better than these other organizations, so we're performing at a higher level than other systems are in their unit economics, that our system performance, our unit continuity, our stability of our units and our system, the financial strength and the capabilities of the franchisor are all better than somebody else. That's compelling in this market. Now,
sure.
Remember I said that the national lenders, by and large, have faded away. That concept that we had for most of the 2000 decade of preferred lenders, where a franchisor would entice a CIT and a GE Capital and a Wachovia, and those are going to be our primary lenders, and we'll refer all our franchisees to them. Those guys are not active in the market now. And so now when you're trying to find some lenders to finance your franchisees, you're going to local banks. Well, you can't set that up ahead of time. Because which local bank do you go? Well, which market are you in? Well, I don't know. Well, when you're in that market, which local bank is the right one to talk to? Well, I don't know. Who do you rely on? The franchisee. Who are you talking to? Who do you know? You've got to be armed as a franchisor with the right information, the information as I'm referring to just a few minutes ago. That's the type of information packaged when you walk in the door to a lender to say, here's our system performance, here's our unit economics, here's our performance metrics, here's our franchisor, the level of support we provide franchisees. None of this, by the way, has anything to do with marketing materials. You know, those glossy color prints that franchise systems or franchisors provide to prospective franchisees. Bankers see things in black and white. Color photos don't do a whole lot for them. They want to just see the numbers and the boring story that says, show me the history, show me the performance, then I'll decide whether I want to do something with you. And that's the world we're in today. And that's the world
right.
we're
and
going
it,
to
it
be in for the next few years.
And some people will think this is a novel idea, but yeah, the banks ultimately want to get paid.
That's right. By the way, in all of this that I've just described, tell me which part of it isn't common sense.
No, I mean, you were saying that, and that's what prompted my question earlier, and I wasn't meaning to, you know, point the finger or pass the blame on the bankers in the past. It just seemed like it should have been common sense, and it should have been something that should have been done all along.
They got too aggressive. They got burned by being too aggressive. Mostly in areas outside of franchising, but they nonetheless got burned. And when they get burned in one area, they pull back in all areas. And so now the pendulum has swung too far the other way. Banks are being too conservative. And we hear the White House and Congress saying, and even the regulators saying, banks, we want you to get more active with small business lending. That's the way out of this recession, you know, provide more capital. Well, as a former regulator, I can tell you that that doesn't work. Telling banks to go out and be more aggressive from a regulator standpoint isn't what happens in the field. I was a field regulator. I went out there, and if a bank started screwing up, my neck was on the line if a bank failed. So I don't care what Washington says. If the bank is making aggressive loans, I'm all over them.
Right.
I'm going to write it up. And that's what's happening today.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, the commercial real estate industry, and I read about that a lot in the Wall Street Journal, and I've read all about, you know, a lot of these loans coming due this year and a whole bunch coming due in 2011. Do you anticipate the commercial real estate industry leveling out, or I guess the ultimate question is, what happens if that dips further? What kind of ripple effect can we expect?
Well, until we get through it, I honestly don't know how big an impact this is going to have. The good news in all of this is not that it's serious. It is serious. The good news is not that it is big. It is big. But the good news is that it's known. It's quantifiable. It's understood. They know how much is coming due. They know how much is underwater. All of this is coming more in a timely and systematic way, which means that banks can reserve for it, knowing that if they've got a commercial real estate portfolio that is $200 million of which is underwater, they can reserve for that. So those things are known today. What happened with the housing mortgage meltdown is it happened very quickly, and there was a lot of uncertainty, and nobody knew what they were holding, because remember, there was so much of the securitization going on. Nobody knew how much of a backflow that securitization was going to have coming back to the banks that thought they had sold securities off without risk, and turns out they hadn't. And so
you're right.
That uncertainty is what created the catastrophic change in 2008 and 2009. We are heading into a period on the commercial real estate side where there's a lot more certainty with what's going on. Now, whether the market pricing for real estate stabilizes at this 40% peak to trough and starts back up, I don't know. I'm not a commercial real estate expert. But what I can say is that we know exactly how many dollars involved, we know who holds those dollars, and we know on that mark-to-market side, where all of it stands, so that we should be able to absorb that in a much more comfortable and smooth fashion. The problem with it is that it is using up bank capital that would otherwise be available for more lending, and that is constraining the capacity principally of the regional banks and the national banks to be more active in business lending. Local banks, by and large, the local institutions were not sitting on a lot of real estate because they had too many capital constraints. They really couldn't do that to any great degree. So they're the ones that are the greater source of business lending opportunity for the franchise community for the next few years, while the regional and national banks digest the home mortgage crisis, digest the commercial real estate refinancing period that's coming up. And that's how I think the flow is going to happen.
Sure. And that's good that, at least from the perspective of the small banks and the community banks being the ones that will be the franchise lenders down the road, or now and down the road. So that ultimately could shed some nice light on franchising in general. Which categories or classes of franchise concepts are attractive to lenders' capital today?
Any brand in any sector that has good performance metrics. It's as simple as that. I said performance matters, and if you remember those two words, you'll have the answer to that question. and it does. I can take a sector that you know, take the pizza sector. There's several hundred franchise brands as well as a huge number of independent mom and pop brands in pizza, right? It's a very competitive world, and it's a very it's in a pretty tight price range in that world. Very competitive. But there are brands that are doing very well there. Why?
Right.
Because they have good unit economics. They have good system performance metrics. The franchisor is financially strong, and the franchisor has good operational performance. They're supporting their franchisees well. The dynamic between franchisor and franchisee is good. So, as a lender, you show me those things, and I'm going to say, well, I'm not afraid of pizza if you can show me that. But if you can't show me that, I'm not even sure I'm comfortable with a healthcare sector that everybody is kind of excited about, because there's with the enormous healthcare legislation change, there's going to be a huge amount of capital flowing in the healthcare sector, and the demographics support that. And so you look at healthcare and say, "Wow, that's a really hot area."
Right.
But I'm just, as a lender, I'd be just as happy with a pizza concept that I know has good performance.
Well, that being said, are there categories of franchise concepts that you see as being significantly challenged with respect to lenders?
Categories in the industries and sector sense?
Right.
Well, I think the answer to that is the obvious ones, that particularly where discretionary spending comes into play. Consumers are in a long-term period of deleveraging, and I'm sure we've all been paying attention to what the press has been saying about that. But from an economic perspective, that cycle of deleveraging takes years to affect, and it's a psychological change. When, as a consumer, I start saying, I don't want to spend as much, I want to have less debt, and I want to sleep better at night, so I am going to contract my discretionary spending. Any business that is catering to my discretionary spending is at risk. Well, the whole food industry caters to discretionary spending to some extent.
Right.
And so what we've seen in the food industry at the high end, where you've got sit-down restaurants, they've been hurt the worst because they're the ones that are the most expensive, the highest ticket. So it's easier my pattern is to spend money at an expensive restaurant. Well, now I'm going to slide down the price point scale, and maybe I'll go to a casual restaurant. And those that were
right,
casual and want to contract, they'll go to fast casual. And those that are fast casual, they'll go to fast food. And that's why a lot of fast food brands right now have been doing pretty well, because they've picked up the flow down of the moving down price point. But don't miss the point. The point is that we're seeing a contraction in consumer spending that's psychological and long-term in nature, because we are in a period where we are deleveraging as a society. And we damn well should, because we got about as far over the top in leveraging as we possibly could. We started out by saying, well, we can spend more of our money and save less, because in the 1980s and 1990s, so we started doing that. And then we got into the 2000s and said, well, look at this clever thing that they came up with called a home equity loan, so I can tap my home equity and I can spend that money. So that became the ATM of the last decade. And so we spent more and more and more, and we were able to get away with it because there were lenders that were willing to do it. Well, now that's stopped, and people are trying to say, I do want a better life, but I want to sleep better at night, and part of a better life is not spending more. It's being more comfortable in my economic situation.
Well, you know,
you can't unwind a $50,000 home equity loan in a year.
Right. I guess we should have titled this segment or this show as The Common Sense of Finance. You're right. I mean, everything you're saying, I keep going back and saying, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. And it is. It's all common sense.
And that's why Fran Data is so active today in providing information and analysis around some of these things and providing financial products to franchisors to help gain access to capital. If a franchisor approaches us and they have really poor performance, if their unit economics are really bad, if their system turnover is really tough, if their franchisor financial position is really precarious,
mm-hmm.
I don't care what kind of work we do, they're not going to get access to capital because those things matter now.
Right, absolutely.
But if a franchisor that says, hey, we did things right, we grew right, we took care of our franchisees, we supported our system correctly, and we have a pretty stable operation, they're going to continue to grow. And I don't care what sector they're in, I don't care what the whether it's an in-vogue sector or that's a tough sector to be in. It doesn't matter. There are good performers in every one of those sectors. And those are the ones that need to show, to demonstrate, to have validated that they are good performers. And the banking community is doing a painful but really a good favor for the franchise community in general, and that is they are raising the standard of performance. They're demanding it. And franchisors are getting the message because you can't keep getting bad, weak units, unqualified franchisees in the game and expect that the banks are going to be standing there. They're not. But that's good for franchising.
Right.
Because we should have the standard of performance raised across the board. We do a lot of benchmarking these days. Why are we doing that? Because franchisors are saying, so what should we be shooting for? What should the standard of performance be? Whether it's operationally and they're looking internally and saying, are we doing the right things for the level of field support that we're providing? Or are our unit economics where they need to be? How do we compare? How are we viewed by the banking community? Those are the things that matter today. But you know what? They should have mattered 10 years ago. It's just that the lenders were a little too liberal then, and now we're too conservative. And so we've got to get back to the middle. But when we get back to the middle, we will find that the performance bar will be higher for everybody.
And everything you're saying makes perfect sense. And, again, rely on common sense. I mean, your insight on this is tremendous. And, you know, I myself got wrapped up in, you know, oh, the tight lending, the this, that. But you put it so succinctly, and it's so clear, it does come down to common sense. And I really appreciate your thoughts and perspective on this. And I certainly appreciate you being a guest on Franchise Today. I'm certain many within franchising, like myself, now have a better understanding of where we are in franchise finance and where we need to be, not where we're headed, but where we need to be in the future, because I think it's brilliant. Common sense. That's what it's about. Thank you,
Darryl.
Well,
Paul, I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Next week on Franchise Today, we're headed back to the world of franchisee associations as I welcome my guest, Stephen Ellerhorst, CEO and Executive Director at the International Association of Franchisees and Dealers. As you may recall, franchisee attorney Michael Webster, the strategic chair at the IAFD, was on Franchise Today during our four-part Legal Eagle franchise series. And also, as mentioned a couple of weeks ago, my co-producer Joe Caruso attended the IAFD convention in Indianapolis and reported back some of the goings-on at the convention. Now, Stephen Ellerhorst will be on the show to talk about the IFAD in more detail and provide us some insight into the objectives of IAFD. So stay tuned for more details during the week within various social media about the upcoming show. Today's segment of Franchise Today will be available on demand shortly after we sign off. And remember, Franchise News Radio, a new component of the Franchise Essentials Media Group, is a weekly show that airs live every Wednesday morning at 7 a.m. Central, 8 a.m. Until next week, I'm Paul Segreto, dedicated to franchise success at all levels, wishing you great success in your franchise relationship, no matter what side of that relationship you're on. Until next week, have a great day and have a great week.